Ladies and gentlemen, the United States Steel Corporation invites you to hear Fred Allen in the Theater Guild on the Air production of Rip Van Winkle. Any similarity to Washington Irving's original is purely accidental. Every day, everywhere, you are served by products of steel. At home, in your business, and when you travel. The trademark of United States Steel, USS, on any steel product is your guide to quality steel. And now, here is Roger Pryor speaking for the Theater Guild, one of America's foremost theatrical producers.
Thank you, Norman Brokenshire, and good evening, everyone. For the holidays, we bring Fred Allen and the Theater Guild together in Rip Van Winkle, or Stop the Drama, an original program by Frank Gabrielson, which you could describe as a travesty of Rip Van Winkle, or Allen's Once Over Lightly. Kenny Delmar plays Hendrik Hudson. As Axel Menander, the director, you'll hear Arthur Margotson. Mary Wicks is Miss Dimmick, and Billy Lynn of the Theater Guild stage success The Silver Whistle will be heard as Mr. Horner. Our version of Rip Van Winkle is a play within a play. Some of the action takes place in an old Dutch-American village. Some more of it happens in the Catskill Mountains. But our story really begins right here at the Vanderbilt Theater at the stage door. It was a few days ago, just before our first rehearsal. A determined-looking chap was trying to open the stage door, and the doorman was saying,
"You can't come in," I said. "Backstage is for actors."
"Now, look, Pop, I am not here trying to collect autographs. I'm the star of this week's program."
"The star?"
"I'm going to play Rip Van Winkle." "Well, I hope it's that funny when I get on the air with it."
"Well, morning, Eddie. What's so funny?"
"Oh, hello, Mr. Pryor. This creep says he's going to be the star of our show this week."
"Why, it's Fred Allen."
"Hello, Roger."
"Well, Fred, what are you doing on the show? Alfred Lunt was supposed to play Rip."
"Well, as I've been trying to tell this old chap here, something happened to Alfred Lunt, and they sent me over to play Rip Van Winkle."
"Oh, swell.
Why didn't you explain it to me, sir?"
"Oh, it's too late to be civil now. You had your chance."
"Here now, let me open the door wide."
"Nothing will help.
I didn't know you played dramatic parts, Fred."
"Dramatic parts, Roger. Anybody can play Rip Van Winkle."
"Well, you think you can do it?"
"Well, why not? All the star has to do is fall asleep. And I brought a couple of sleeping pills in case I'm not in the mood. I mean,
Well, I wonder what happened to Alfred Lunt."
"You know something, Roger? I imagine that he turned down the part. You know, with all the shows that he's in, Alfred Lunt gets a percentage. Now, why should he play a part where he sleeps all through the play? With his eyes closed, Lunt can't count the house. With me, I have to play it."
"You have to play it?"
"It's my lawyer's fault, Roger. Do you know, by any chance, in the legal profession, do you know where Amos Torts?"
"Oh, yes. Amos is the Theater Guild lawyer."
"Oh, well, Torts is everybody's lawyer. He's the only lawyer I know who will even plead a case on the goodwill court. You know, if it wasn't for Torts, I wouldn't be here."
"Well, how do you mean, friend?"
"Well, it all started a few weeks ago, Roger. Torts asked me to come over to his office. As I came in the door, I heard Amos on the telephone."
"Yes, R.H. Right, R.H. There's only one thing to do, R.H. We'll sue." "Okay, R.H.
"Well, Amos?"
"I'm sorry to hold you up, Fred. That was my client, R.H. Macy."
"R.H. Macy. Well, Amos, you..."
"Oh, excuse me, Fred. Yes, Sir Bernard. Right, Bernard. There's only one thing to do, Bernard. We'll sue." "Yes. Okay, Bernard. My client, Bernard Gimble."
"Oh, really?" "Well, who are Macy and Gimble going to sue?"
"Each other."
"But you represent both clients, Amos. How can you sue yourself?"
"I have a split personality."
"Oh, I see." Amos, you sent for me."
"Ah, yes, Fred. I've been going over your accounts. I must caution you that you are a spendthrift."
"Amos, for your information, I am no spendthrift. I am tighter than the top olive in a bottle."
"You made a lot of money last year, but you didn't keep much."
"Amos, I didn't hide the money in a pumpkin. I give you my word. Most of the money went for taxes."
"Fred, I can show you how you can make more money than you ever dreamed of."
How, Amos?
Do what some of the smart comedians are doing. I can sell your program outright to the Equitable Broadcasting Network. They'll pay millions for you, Fred. And think of it. You won't have to play opposite those programs giving away iceboxes.
Oh, say that. Well, you mean you could get me one of those deals? Well, if you can get a big enough price, Amos, I'll retire.
No, 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 Fred. If your program is sold to another network, your services will have to be included.
Yeah?
Now, have I your permission to go ahead?
Amos, you see what you can do. I'll go over and tell the Chase National Bank to stand by. Well, all my life, Roger, I've heard that money is the root of all evil. And all my life, I've been trying to get enough of the root together to put that theory to the test. Well, you can imagine how I felt a few days later when the phone rang and Amos Tort said...
Fred?
Yes, Amos?
Congratulate me, Fred. I have just sold you to the Equitable Broadcasting Company for $6 million.
Wow. $6 million. Think of it, Roger. And I could keep 75%. Why, I had so much money, I not only bought Portland a television set, I got her 4 bartenders to go with it. Well, the next month, my program switched over to the Equitable Network. Everything was going fine. And then one day, the vice president in charge of programs sent for me. As I came into his office, he said...
Alan?
Yes, Mr. Dead Air?
I want to talk to you.
Well, I didn't know you vice presidents could talk. I always thought you sent memos, you boy.
Don't be funny, Alan. You can't push vice presidents around on this network.
Well, what is on your executive mind, Mr. Dead Air?
Alan, I'm not satisfied with your work.
Well, my program is the same as it's always been. Same structure, same stooges. I'm even telling the same jokes.
Alan, do you know how many hours there are in a day?
24.
Do you know how many days there are in a week?
Well, I did know. I heard some housewife win $8,000 for answering that question on a quiz show the other day. Break the Sponsor, I think, was the name of the program.
I repeat, Alan, don't be funny. How many days in a week?
Well, this woman said 7. And for that, she got a lifetime supply of Venetian blinds.
Now then, do you know how many hours that is in a week?
Say, you know, that was the giant jackpot question. 168 hours.
And do you realize that out of those 168 hours, you were on the air only 30 minutes?
A little of me goes a long way, Mr. Dead Air.
The Equitable Broadcasting Company paid $6 million for you, Alan, and we intend to get our money's worth.
Oh, you mean you want me to do another program?
Not one other program, Alan. Oh. Several other programs. We're going to keep you busy.
Well, in rebuttal, Mr. Dead Air, may I say to you, sir, here now in your executive presence, that you cannot make me work if I don't want to?
Have you read your contract?
All but the fine print. Fine print gives me a headache. My lawyer explained everything to me.
I'm afraid he brushed over a few things. I'll read this clause. Where's my magnifying glass?
Right there, next to your aspirin, right there.
Yes, here it is. The party of the first part, that's you, grants the party of the second part, that's us, full and entire use of his services, professional and personal, now and forever. In other words, you belong to the Equitable Broadcasting Company.
You mean that I'm a slave?
For $6 million, the Equitable Broadcasting Company is going to get something.
Oh, there's some mistake here, Mr. Dead Air. Get Taft or Hartley. Get my lawyer... Call Amos Tort.
It's no use, Alan. Amos Tort is our lawyer, too.
Then you can take your money back, sir. You can send the truck in the morning. I'll have the money piled up in front of the house. Neatly.
We don't want your money, Alan. We'll make more money out of you.
Yeah, this is terrible. You should try a little duzz on that laugh, sir. This is terrible. What am I going to do?
You can start getting to bed early. Yes. Arthur Godfrey's giving up that early morning spot, and we're putting you in there.
Now, wait a minute. Oh, no. Mr. Dead Air, wait. Oh, mister, I can't get up at 5 o'clock in the morning.
I'll make it easy for you. I'll make you an all-night disc jockey, and then you'll be up.
Oh. So that's my story, Roger. There are 168 hours in a week, and I am working all of them.
And they sent you over here to take Alfred Lunt's place today.
Roger, they send me every place. I just finished barking on Bulldog Drummond's program. I hold the pail on the milkman's matinee. And I go around with a blotter after the ink spots. When the mystery chef finishes cooking a dish, I solve the mystery.
But, Fred, I think you'll enjoy working with the Theater Guild. The Guild is the foremost theatrical organization in the country.
Roger, that is what worries me. With the plays the Guild puts on, they are authorities on sleep. Now, when they see me... when they see me as Rip Van Winkle...
Oh, you can't miss. Axel Menander is the program director.
Menander?
Yeah, he's also one of the heads of the Theater Guild.
Don't tell me the Theater Guild has two heads.
No, I don't see.
Yeah, here comes Menander now.
Menander. This is Menander.
Other people get Gabo. Why can't we?
She just won't do radio, Mr. Menander.
Nonsense. The stage, the cinema, the wireless, all drama. Gabo can do one, she can do the other. Wire her to that effect, Mr. Dimmick.
Yes, Mr. Menander.
Now then, where's our star for today?
I'm right here, Mr. Menander.
You're not Alfred Lunt.
Mr. Menander.
No. Yes, Dimmick.
We couldn't get Lunt, remember?
Oh, yes, yes. Then who's this seedy-looking mummer?
He's Fred Allen.
Fred Allen? To play Rip Van Winkle?
Shh, Mr. Menander. He's the only one we could get. We scraped the barrel on this part.
And you certainly reached bottom.
Oh, careful. He might be able to hear, and if we lose him, there just isn't anybody.
Well, Fred, it certainly is nice to have you with us.
And it's nice to be here, Mr. Menander.
Since the death of Joseph Jefferson, I've always maintained that you're the one person who can play Rip Van Winkle.
Thank you, Mr. Menander.
I expect great things of you, Fred.
I expect the God of Truth to strike me dead. I expect United States Steel, the industrial family that serves the nation, to break their contract.
Did you say something, sir?
I said only that I expected great things of you, Fred. You'll play the part beautifully.
Oh.
If you can play anything with that face and that voice that sounds like somebody chewing slate pencils.
What did you say, sir?
I said you play this part beautifully.
No, no, I mean after that, sir.
Look here, have you been listening to my asides?
Your what?
Asides, my boy. The Theater Guild once produced a play of Eugene O'Neill's called Strange Interlude. In it, O'Neill employed an antique dramatic device known as the aside.
Yes.
A character speaks his thoughts, but none of the other characters can hear him.
Ooh.
Many of us at the Theater Guild have adopted it in our personal lives.
Oh, I see, I see.
Now, do you understand?
Though heaven knows what understanding can penetrate that moronic brow.
I think I understand.
Or do I? Menander's nuts. Only an insane man would go around repeating his thoughts out loud. I wonder if all of the people at the Theater Guild go around talking to themselves. I wouldn't be surprised.
Mr. Vick, are we ready? Well, let's get to Rip Van Winkle.
The cast is all here, Mr. Menander.
Well, where's our author? Where's GBS?
GBS? Gosh, GBS. Did he write this script?
Well, GBS writes most of the Theater Guild scripts.
Gad, this is an honor. Starring in a play by GBS.
Oh, here's GBS now.
Oh.
Well, howdy, Axel.
GBS, I'd like you to meet our star, Fred Allen.
It's a real honor, sir.
Fred, this is our author, GBS, Galveston B. Sumac.
Galveston B. Galveston, the GBS, what does the B stand for, Mr. Sumac?
Beethoven.
Oh.
Oh, but I never use it. I don't want to get my reputation on another man's name. Plain old GBS is good enough for me.
Well, GBS, have you been writing long?
Yep, been writing since before I could read.
Oh, say.
Wasn't old enough to walk hardly before they found me scribbling on our parlor walls. All I needed was a wall and an idea, and there was no holding me. One day, a paper hanger happened to take a look at my childish scrawls on the wall and found out there wasn't scrawls at all. Them was poems.
Well, has your house ever been published, GBS?
Nope, not that one at Galveston.
Well, tell me, don't you ever write on paper?
Couldn't ever get used to paper.
Say.
Wall somehow inspired me. I'll never forget that ranch we had on the panhandle. Wrote my first published story there. Covered all the walls of the bunkhouse, inside, and the doors on the outside.
Well, how did you get your story published? You mail in the bunkhouse?
I hate to butt in, GBS, but we've got to get on with our rehearsal. Now, get set, everybody. All right, Roger. Give us the opening line.
The story of Rip Van Winkle.
Music, Louis. Hold it, hold it. Stop, stop. Louis.
Yes, Mr. Menander?
This is the story of Rip Van Winkle. What is that barnyard music you're playing?
Well, the Guild always insists on music that fits the play.
That is our tradition, yes.
Well, I read Rip Van Winkle. Most of the story takes place in the Catskill Mountains. This music just fits.
This foul symphony?
Well, it's She'll Be Coming Round the Mountain. You see, for Rip, we can change it to He'll Be Coming Round the Mountain.
Ridiculous, Louis. Now, picture Rip. He's up there in the Catskills overlooking the Hudson.
The river. I gotcha.
Let's try it again.
Okay. Let's go, boys. One, two.
Stop! Stop it.
Something wrong, Mr. Menander?
What is that brassy gem?
Anchors away. It fits in with the river.
Louis, this is Rip Van Winkle, not Mr. Roberts. The story concerns Rip's adventures with a band of Dutch settlers in the hills.
Oh, Dutch. Okay, boys.
Hold it, hold it. Stop the music.
Yes, Mr. Menander.
Louis.
Yes, Mr. Menander.
Forget Rip Van Winkle. Forget the Theater Guild. The story takes place in the 18th century. Play anything.
I'll improvise.
Where the Catskill Mountains are the greenest, and the lordly Hudson is most blue, a little village lies. And in the year 1770, there lived here a simple, good-natured rustic by the name of Rip Van Winkle. And now, if we listen carefully, we discover Rip in his cornfield, working.
Stop.
Hold it, everybody. Now we'll hear from the genius of the advertising agency. This is Mr. Horner, everybody.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Axel.
Thought it'd be more convenient if you'd wait till after rehearsal.
It would normally, but this is basic.
Well?
Fred, does that snoring mean that you were supposed to be asleep?
Well, that's what the script says, Mr. Horner.
Fred, this is basic. We're doing an American classic, and it's un-American to have the hero a lazy man.
Well, that's what it says in the story. That's the story.
Well, he can't be lazy.
Now, just a moment. I'm the director. I have something to say here. Rip was not lazy.
He fell asleep in the field.
Do you think for a moment that the Theater Guild would have the slightest interest in Rip Van Winkle if it was simply the portrait of a lazy man?
If he's not lazy, what is he?
He's neurotic. Obviously neurotic.
That's worse than being lazy. How do you think the client would like it if we did an American classic and the hero is out of his mind?
Being neurotic is not being insane. I happen to be neurotic myself.
You see?
Say, I have a suggestion, gentlemen.
Well?
Why don't we play Rip as a lazy neurotic, but at the same time make him level-headed and full of go?
That's good,
Fred. Blend, though.
Yes.
It can start out with him asleep in the cornfield.
Well, suppose he's asleep at a table in front of the tavern.
You mean he's drunk?
Falstaff drinks.
Falstaff's not the hero of an American classic.
Mr. Horner, this all happened in 1770. Rip wasn't even a citizen then.
A foreigner, huh? Well, in that case, you can do anything you like with him.
I can sleep at the opening?
You can drop dead at the opening.
Let's start once again, lads.
Where the Catskill Mountains are the greenest and the lordly Hudson is most blue, a little village lies. And in the year 1770, there lived here a simple, good-natured fellow by the name of Rip Van Winkle. And now, if you listen carefully, we discover Rip in his cornfield working.
You call that a snore, Mr. Allen?
As snores go, I thought it was a gem.
Well, it won't do for the Guild.
Well, what's the matter with it?
I want a snore with expression in it.
Oh.
Now, if Alfred Lunt was snoring at that microphone, it would be the most... Oh, it would be too beautiful to bear.
Yes?
He'd make us think of little children drowsing over their toys.
Yes?
Or murderers haunted by their dreams.
and of great whales asleep at sea.
Great whales.
Now you try it. No, no. Try for an organ tone.
An organ tone. I shall open my diapason.
No, no, no. I want a snore, not a dive bomber.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was using both nostrils. I'll cut down to one nostril. How was that?
No, no, you aren't breathing right. That's what the trouble is.
Well, there's only one way to breathe, in and out.
No. No, you aren't characterizing, Mr. Allen.
No.
From your snore, I want to know the kind of man Rip is.
Yes?
I want to know everything about him. You know, that he has his joys and his sorrows, his ecstasies.
Yes?
This isn't just a snore, Fred.
No.
This is the triumphant song of the brotherhood of man. This is what you have in common with your radio audience.
I see what you mean, Mr. Menander.
Good. Now, let's start our rehearsal and go right through, shall we? Stand by, Roger. Music. Louis.
Where the Catskill Mountains are the greenest and the lordly Hudson is most blue, a little village lies.
Oh, hurry it up, Roger. We've heard this.
Oh, and in the year 1770, there lived here a simple, good-natured fellow by the name of Rip Van Winkle. Now, if we listen carefully, we'll discover Rip in his cornfield working.
Fie, Rip, fie. Thus wouldst thou weed. Up, dullard.
Hold, wife.
I shouldst hold thou sleeping, everlastingly sleeping.
Why dost thou sleep at midday, father?
Art thou ill, mine father?
I am not ill, children, nor do I sleep if.
So why art thou not working like the other men of our village?
Because, O son of my loins, I am thinking.
Well, what dost thou think about, sweet father?
About a new way to catch the running deer. Then we shall never want for meat.
Could talk be eaten, we'd all be fat. Sleep and prattle is thy whole life. And all the while we go hungry and in rags. Hast thou no pride?
Pride is a sin before the Almighty, Dame Winkle.
I'd rather have thee a sinner then than what thou art. A lazy, useless, shiftless, idle, good for nothing. Up, I say.
Aye, aye, Dame Winkle.
Oh, and to think I could have been the wife of the Burgomaster Van Camp, the richest man in the village. And on the Sabbath, I should have ridden forth to church in a gleaming carriage with red wheels.
Someday we shalt have a carriage.
Wilt we, father? Oh, joy. Oh, joy.
Stop filling thy children's heads with foolish fancies. Get up and attend to thy labors.
In but a moment, Dame Winkle.
Oh, Rip, you try me sore. I have half a mind to beat thee.
Oh, oucheth, 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 oucheth. I'm glad thou hast but half a mind for it. A whole one would be my death. Oh, that hurteth. Oucheth, oucheth.
Then do as I tell thee now. I have a task for thee, if thy strength is up to it.
What is it? My strength is up to it. What is it, Dame?
Take thy small son into the village. I want Burgomaster Van Camp, who, as everyone knows, is also the village barber, to shear our son's overflowing lock.
Thou mean'st thou wouldst his hair cut?
Even so. And if thou so much as touch thy foot inside the tavern door, thou'lt hear from me.
I dare say, Dame.
Cease loitering, then. Go and take that mangy dog of yours along with thee. His scent offends me.
Come, my son. Come, my dog.
Oh, good father.
Yes, thou urchin in my own image.
Mother saith that if thou spend half the time in church thou dost in the tavern, thou wouldst be a greater saint than any.
Thy mother hath a long tongue.
Look, there is the tavern now, father.
Why, so it is, son.
I knew not this was the way to Burgomaster's Van Camp's, who, as everyone knows, is also the village barber.
Methought the walk more pleasant this way, son.
Oh, it would distress mother should she learn we walked thus past the tavern.
We are not yet past it, son.
Well, for thy sake, father, I hope that mother learneth not we cameth this way.
Who would possibly spread such a tale as that?
I have need of a new book of maxims, Father.
Pray for it, son.
Greetings, Bob Van Winkle.
Oh, look, Father. There in his new carriage is Burgomaster Van Kamp.
Who, as everyone knows, is also the village barber.
Oh, joy.
Cut. Now, wait a minute. Menander, look.
What are you stopping for, Fred?
I just want to get out from under this bare covey of adjectives for a while here.
Yes, you do seem to be having a bit of trouble with the words.
Trouble isn't... This is not exactly Noel Coward dialogue, I must say.
Well, Fred, what I was after was the savor and the aroma of the period.
GBS, I think you have trapped the aroma.
Alfred Lunt would just breeze through a part like this, Fred.
I can see why he'd want to hurry through it.
Well, see if you can't get a bit more of the classic manner in the playing,
classic
Fred.
Manner? This story starts off like a long epitaph.
Yeah, and how would you write it, Mr. Allen?
Well, look at GBS. Look at this opening speech of Dame Winkle's. Look at this. Fie, rip, fie. Thus wouldst thou weed up, dullard. Now, wouldn't it be a lot simpler if she just said, get up, you rat?
Hardly 18th century, Fred.
Well, neither am I.
Well, now, just how would you tell Rip Van Winkle, Mr. Allen?
Well, I wouldn't change it much.
All right. Well, how would you do it?
Well, excuse me. Before we start, Mr. Menander, there was a phone call for you from the Equitable Broadcasting Company, Mr. O.O. Dead Air.
What did he want, Miss Dimmock?
Well, he said not to let Mr. Allen go when the rehearsal was over until the men from the broadcasting company came to pick him up. They'll give you a receipt for him.
Must you bother me with this trivia? Oh, let's get on with your idea, Fred.
Well, that's impossible just now, Mr. Menander. I've noticed here with a message from United States Steel is Norman Brokenshire.
You are listening to Rip Van Winkle, produced by the Theater Guild on the Air, presented by the United States Steel Corporation. And here speaking for United States Steel is George Hicks.
Good evening. We won't be with you again until after New Year's. So let me take this opportunity to wish each and every one of you a very happy, healthy, and prosperous 1949. Now from Huntington, West Virginia, with a special New Year's message from U.S. Steel, is Benjamin F. Fairless, President of the Corporation. Mr. Fairless.
Last year, about this time, when I was privileged to speak to you, I talked about the importance of teamwork. Teamwork between labor and management, between industry and government, and among all of us in American industry and business. Teamwork was my idea of the most important subject I could talk about in a New Year's message from U.S. Steel. And this year again, it is just as important. U.S. Steel, along with the entire steel industry, set impressive production records in 1948. The industry shipments to customers, for example, were over 2 million tons greater than the previous all-time record year of 1944. And, of course, U.S. Steel, thanks to its $900 million modernization and improvement program, had plenty to do with these record shipments. But let me repeat what I said last year. Record-breaking production in 1949, just as in 1948 and 1947, depends not only on the size and efficiency of plants and equipment, but far more on what I consider the most important force for good in the world today, and that is the spirit and practice of teamwork. During 1948, for example, there was good teamwork going on in almost every phase of U.S. Steel's operations. Good teamwork between labor, as represented by the United Steelworkers, CIO, and our management. Splendid teamwork and understanding on the part of our customers, large and small, in the face of demand, which continued to stay ahead of even 1948's record-breaking production. And I only wish I could itemize the many, many kinds of teamwork U.S. Steel enjoyed in 1948 from transportation, coal mining, and all the other vitally important industries that help us provide you, the public, with more steel and better steel than ever before. Finally, even as I wish all of you a happy, and prosperous new year on behalf of the 300,000 workers and 228,000 stockholders of U.S. Steel, I would also like to ask each of you to think about this teamwork idea for 1949. If all of us in the United States will really work together in the days ahead, then no problem will be too big for us, no goal too difficult to achieve. Working together as a team, we can help not only our own nation, but the entire world move forward into a new era of enduring peace and prosperity.
We pause now for station identification. You are listening to the Theater Guild on the Air, presented by the United States Steel Corporation.
And now the curtain rises on the second act of Rip Van Winkle, starring Fred Allen as Rip and featuring Kenny Delmar as Torts, Arthur Margotson as Menander, Mary Wicks as Dimmick, and Billy Lynn as Mr. Horner. Fred Allen, who has become the exclusive property of the Equitable Broadcasting Company because he failed to read his contract properly, has been rented to the Theater Guild on the air for a performance of Rip Van Winkle. A rehearsal for the play is now going on, which, when you consider the circumstances, certainly needs it.
Now then, Fred, you were about to tell us your version of Rip Van Winkle.
Well, Mr. Menander, I'd have it start out the same way that it starts now, you see. An old Dutch village. Only this Dutch village got big. It's New York City. The time is 1928. And in a Bronx flat live Rip Van Winkle, his wife, and their two children.
Where's your pa, Judy?
Kitchen.
Doing what?
Working.
Pa, working?
Cross my heart and hope to die more. Working.
Is he fixing the stove like he's been promising for the last year and a half?
No, he's working on his mouse trap. That one he's inventing.
That.
He's working hard, Ma. He's got it set in front of a hole, and he's waiting for it to go off.
Wake up, you lazy bum.
I'm awake. I'm awake. I'm thinking.
Look who's thinking.
It's just a question of getting the bugs out of my mousetrap.
Anybody who baits a trap with cheese in a New York apartment is going to get bugs. Why don't you get up on your big feet and go out and look for a job like other men?
Can't you just be patient until I perfect my mousetrap?
Your own son needs shoes.
Oh,
Judy needs undershirts. Yeah. The rent ain't paid. And all you can think about is catching some defenseless mouse. What kind of a man are you that you get so much fun out of picking on mice that never done nothing to you? Hey, you know what you are?
What?
You're a neurotic.
Yeah?
I read about your kind. You're a neurotic.
What's wrong with trying to build the best mousetrap in the world?
Are you in your mousetrap?
Oh,
my old steady Harold Van Camp not only owns his own barber shop, but he just bought an almost brand new stud steer cat.
Oh, I wish we had a car, dearie.
Someday we'll have two cars, Judy. If my mousetrap doesn't do it, Coolidge Prosperity will.
Say, does it ever occur to you that I could have married Mr. Harold Van Camp?
It occurs to me daily on the hour.
If you just find a job, Mr. Rip Van Winkle, maybe your family could ride around an almost brand new stuffed bear cat.
I'll find a job soon.
You'll go looking right this minute. You go to the employment agency and you go right now. You hear me?
All right.
And while you're there, you can take Junior to Harold Van Camp's barbershop next door. Junior's got to speak a piece in Sunday school, and I don't want him looking like a fiddler. He's out front playing.
At the moment, I do not happen to have the money for Junior's haircut.
That is a surprise, Mr. Well. Rockefeller. Well, here's the 60 cents, and don't let me catch you losing it.
Could I maybe have a nickel extra for a cigar?
You could not.
A stogie?
And take that lazy dog of yours with you when you go. He smells.
Well, you just wait until I finish my mousetrap. The world will beat a path to our door.
Paw, when the world beats a path to our door, who'll keep it shoveled in the wintertime?
Junior will. Come on, Wolf. Come on, boy. We next discover Rip Van Winkle walking along a Bronx street with his dog, Wolf, and his son, Junior.
Boy, I'll be glad when I'm as big as you, Pa.
Proud of your father, eh, Junior?
You're kidding. But when I'm your size, I just like to see you make me get my hair cut.
Stop, Junior.
Huh?
Junior, don't move.
What's Wolf doing?
Acting like a well-trained English setter should. Wolf's pointing.
It ain't polite to point. Point at what?
You see that gentleman with the big black cigar?
Yeah. Oh, now he's throwing a cigar away.
So he is. Fetch, Wolf. Fetch, boy.
I like that. He's picking up the cigar, Pa.
See how gently he does it so the cigar won't be harmed? What form?
I like that. He's barking with a lit cigar in his mouth. That ain't easy. Oh, now he's bringing it back to us.
Retrieve is the proper term, Junior. Wolf is a bird dog.
The cigar must be a white owl, huh? He's laying it right in your hand and still lighted.
Blood tells every time, Junior. Good dog, Wolf. Good dog,
well,
Wolf.
What do you know? You taught him to snipe butts.
A poor man has to be resourceful, Junior.
Boy, wait till I tell the kids about this.
I think it may be better if you don't tell anyone about this, Junior. Your mother might think it was undignified.
Yeah, well, give me a dime or I tell her.
Well, I haven't a dime.
Okay, a nickel then.
I'm your father, Junior. I haven't got a nickel.
Okay, I'm going to tell Ma. That's all.
Junior,
I'm going to tell
Junior,
Ma.
Quiet, Junior.
Ma,
Junior.
That's all.
Junior, I'll make a deal with you.
Why?
Don't tell your mother, and I'll let you smoke half of the cigar. Well, let's go. Come on, Wolf. Ah, nice, Wolf.
Hey, Pa, what's a speakeasy?
A speakeasy? Junior, a speakeasy.
Well, you ought to know. Ma says you're the reason they have them.
Well, that's your mother. She's as funny as a mortician's acquaintance.
Yeah, but what's a speakeasy?
Well, you might call it an adult soda fountain.
Gee, I wish I could go to one sometime.
I would like to satisfy your curiosity, Junior, but we only have 60 cents, and that 60 cents is earmarked for your haircut.
Well, could we just walk in one and look? We wouldn't have to buy a soda.
Stop, Junior. You make me thirsty talking about sodas.
I want to go to a speakeasy, Pa.
Come on, come on, come on, then. How can I deny a little child's tears? Hello, Hugo.
What are you doing with that kid in my speakeasy? It's illegal.
This urchin happens to be my son, Rip Jr.
Son or no son, I ain't giving you credit today.
We're only here to look around, Hugo.
No credit.
By the way, Hugo, did you ever hear Wolf and me sing our duet? How dry I am! How dry I am!
I bought you the last free drink I'm ever going to buy you for singing it. Hard-hearted Hugo, cash on the bar.
I want some moxie, Pa.
You can't have it.
I want moxie.
Then you should keep your hair from growing. We need this 60 cents to give to that Harold Van Camp so he can ride around in his Stutz Bearcat.
I don't want a haircut. I want moxie.
No credit.
Not even for moxie, Hugo?
I'm not giving you nothing today.
I don't want much, Hugo.
I'm giving you nothing, I said.
Not even the lend of a pair of scissors, Hugo?
Well, here's a scissors, then.
Come here, Junior.
What are you going to do, Pa?
Take off your beret, Junior.
What happened to my boy's hair?
That Van Camp just ain't much of a barber, that's all.
Harold cut them chunks out?
You know, I think his fingers are still cramped from driving his studs.
Oh, how could you let Mr. Van Camp do such a thing, Junior?
Well, Pa was there, too.
Oh, ain't you going to be a sight in Sunday school? It don't even look like a haircut. Looks like he put his head in the pencil sharpener.
Let us be thankful for small favors, wife. He still has his ears.
And to think that Harold Van Camp could do this to me after what him and me was to each other.
Come in, come in.
This is one place I'm going to sell a ticket to the barber's picnic, or my name ain't Harold Van Camp.
Oh, hello, Harold. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Van Camp.
Mr. Van Camp, she says. But no kidding. What a picnic. Next Sunday at the old barber's home in the Catskill Mountains. It's for the benefit of the barber's fund. But we won't clip you much.
Some nerve you got to talk about barber's benefits after what you done to Junior.
I done?
Look at my poor boy.
What, he get run over?
Don't play dumb with me. You cut his hair and I'm going to sue.
Oh, no, I didn't cut the kid's hair. Holy cow, I'd do a better job than that with my grandmother's false teeth.
Well, who done it then?
Well, it wasn't no barber. If you ask me, it wasn't even a man. Looks more like a baboon went crazy with the hedge clippers.
A baboon, huh? I know somebody that description fits to a T. Rip?
Yes, Dame?
What do you got to say for yourself?
Me?
You, Mr. No Good.
Well,
What's that, a fire?
It's my mousetrap. It works.
Hey, Pa! Pa, Wolf sat on the mousetrap again.
So the following Sunday finds Rip Van Winkle at the old barber's picnic.
Hold it. Hold everything a minute, please.
Oh, now what, Horner?
Well, we can't have all this stuff about barber's benefits, Fred.
But barbers have to have benefits, Mr. Horner. When a barber gets old, what has he got? 2 or 3 tons of old hair. What can a barber do with old hair? Sit around and part it?
I'm talking about this Van Camp being a barber.
Oh.
He's your heavy, isn't he? He's the villain.
Yes, he's the villain, that's right.
Then he can't be a barber. That's no way to treat a sponsor who makes steel. What do you think they make razors out of? Bubble gum?
Oh, I see your point, Mr. Horner. This is a problem. If we offend school teachers, the bottom will drop out of the pen point market. Fuller brush men are in constant contact with metal doorbells. A playboy might even own stock in the company. Say, how about this?
What, Fred?
Harold Van Camp, a non-entity.
That's it, Fred. A non-entity. A perfect radio character.
Shall we continue, gentlemen? So the following Sunday finds Rip Van Winkle at the old non-entity's picnic. Everybody who is nobody is there. And Rip is having the time of his life.
Wake up, can't you?
I'm awake.
Some man you are. You can't even come to the Catskill Mountains for a day of rest and relaxation without falling asleep.
Where's Wolf?
He's running around someplace. I hope he's lost. Serve you right for bringing him.
I better take a look around. Here, Wolf. Here, Wolf. Wolf.
If you're going to look for him, get up and look. Don't just lay there and yell.
What's the matter, Judy?
I'm scared something's happened to Wolf.
Oh, he's just off hunting a rabbit or something.
But I heard him barking up on the side of that big mountain there.
Well, don't worry. Wolf won't fall off.
But that mountain's haunted.
It's what, Judy?
It's haunted. One of the old men who lives here told me so. Some kind of awful things live up on top of the mountain. And they come out whenever it thunders. They're out now.
Ain't you ashamed of yourself, Rip Van Winkle? Here's your own daughter crying her heart out and you ain't stirring a step. Get that dog.
Here, Wolf. Here, Wolf. Wolf.
Oh, get up and look for him like a man.
All right, I will.
Oh, be careful of those awful things up on the mountain, Paw.
Judy, after the years I've spent with your mother, there's nothing I can meet up in the mountain that can frighten me. Wolf! Wolf! Where are you, Wolf? There you are, you runaway. Come here. What's the idea of making me chase all the way up this mountain after you, huh? What was that again? Oh, all right. But don't let it happen again. Now, let's see. Which way do we go? A fine nose you've got for a hunting dog. You must have a sinus condition. Every time I follow you, we come out higher up on the mountain. We're lost, Wolf, and it's your fault. Getting dark, too. The wife ain't gonna like this. This place gives me the creeps. One of the old men at the non-entity's home said it was haunted. What's the matter, Wolf? Wolf, you hear something? Take it easy, boy. Wolf, come back here. Wolf! Wolf! What do you suppose scared him?
Methinks we did, Manier.
Where did you two guys come from? I don't know what's so funny, except those clothes you two are wearing, those baggy breeches, those buckles on your shoes. What are you trying to look like, old Dutch cleanser?
Thou will come with us, Mynheer?
Oh, no. You two guys are midgets. Don't give me any of your small talk.
Thou will come, we said, Mynheer. The commander is waiting.
All nine pins, a strike.
Commander Hudson, my ear.
Why dost thou bother me at my game?
We found this upon the mountainside, my ear, Commander.
What is it, an aborigine?
I am not an aborigine. I'm from the Bronx.
Thou art a reckless man to break in upon the privacy of Hendrik Hudson.
Hudson, you're named after the river down below there?
The river is named for me, my ear fool. Look there, my noble Hudson. It is mine. I found it. And here upon this mountaintop, I keep everlasting vigil, watching it.
Well, sounds like steady work, a river watcher.
Can't thou visualize the beauty that lay there when I first sailed my ship, the Half Moon on it? It was fit to water the Tree of Paradise. And now upon its noble palisades, amusement parks. Upon its green banks, signboards for liver pills. And on the breast of its moonlit waters, the Weehawken Ferry. You have desecrated mine river, Mynheer.
Not me. I never even went wading in it, Commander.
You are a modern man, Mynheer. You spend your life destroying beauty, and therefore I shall destroy you.
Well, let's not be too hasty, Commander.
Hast thou not heard from time to time how men have fallen to their deaths among these mountains?
Well?
They did not fall, Mynheer.
No?
I threw them down the mountainside, even as I bowled this ball at yonder ninepin.
Say, you can't do much business with a bowling alley up here in the mountains, can you?
Dost thou play at bowls?
Well, I sort of dust, yes.
We'll bowl then, thou against myself. What wager?
What do you suggest?
What say to this? The contents of my purse and pocket against the contents of thine, sight unseen.
That's more than fair, Commander, seeing that I haven't any money.
Your life against my money, then.
Well, Mrs. Winkle doesn't like me to gamble.
It is your only chance to save your wretched life, Mynheer. Beat me at bowls and you go free.
Well, let's bowl, then.
But I must warn you, Mynheer, I have never lost a game.
And I must warn you that up to now, I have never lost my life.
Well, now as we bowl, we drink. Pour schnapps.
Aye, aye, Commander.
Ah, good. There's no music like the pouring of schnapps. Each time you bowl, you drink one glass of schnapps. That is Dutch custom.
Well, don't the bowling balls get egg-shaped after a few games, Commander?
You cannot refuse my hospitality, Mynheer. If you cannot drink, good, that is your lookout.
Well, I'm not going to refuse your hospitality. I was just wondering if you'd accept some of mine.
What's that bottle?
Oh, just one I happen to have with me at the picnic. As long as we're being hospitable, you drink this while I drink your schnapps.
You give me great advantage, Mynheer. My schnapps is very strong.
Hospitality is hospitality.
Spoken like a Dutchman. What do you call your pale beverage? Holland gin?
Bathtub gin.
As we drink, eh?
Good.
Good. And now we bowl.
Oh, too bad, Commander. You missed.
That never happened before.
Now I'll try. There's a strike. Missed again, Commander.
Why are the pins floating in the air?
Watch how we do it in the Bronx. There's a strike in the game, Commander.
Well, take my money, Mynheer. And now we roll another.
What's the bet this time?
Thou hast all my coin.
Yeah?
But I have here some parchment deeds. Land grants they are. I'll wager of them.
Fair enough.
But first we drink. Schnapps, bathtubs.
Well,
there's another game. Another game, Hendrick.
I cannot understand it. I didn't even get my ball in the alley that time.
Well, at least you stayed on the mountain, Hendrick.
Thou hast won my last deed, Rip.
Oh, has I, Hendrick?
Yeah. The bathtubs are gone also, too.
Oh, so is the schnapps gone, too, Hendrick, old boy.
Yes, so. Let's sleep it.
Good idea, Hendrick. Let's sleep it, huh? Wonder how long we slept, Hendrick. Sounds morning. Hendrick. Hey, where is everybody? Oh, my head, those schnapps. Oh, how am I going to explain this to my wife? Well, I was climbing down the mountain, dear. I met some little Dutchman and, Well, I guess I better get back to picnic and find the wife and kids. Well, you see, dear, there's an old friend of mine by the name of Hendrick Hudson, and, never works. She'll never believe it. We next discover Rip Van Winkle on the bus to New York, somewhat bewildered because his beard has grown a foot while he was asleep. Say, what's the newspaper say, mister?
The usual, all bad.
All bad, eh? Who's Al Capone been knocking off lately? Anybody we know?
What are you talking about, old-timer? Capone's been dead for years.
Yeah, I get up too early in the morning for that to fool me, mister. Next thing I know, you'll be telling me the Prince of Wales is King of England or something.
No, he retired. The king's king now.
King's king. I only asked you what the news was, mister.
Mostly about the president's speech. A good picture of him, look.
President, for heaven's sake.
Oh, what's the matter?
Coolidge is wearing glasses and he's changed his name to Harry. A little later, Rip Van Winkle mounts a familiar flight of stairs in the Bronx and opens a well-remembered door.
Oh, well, what do you mean, walking in like this?
Where's Mrs. Winkle?
I'm Mrs. Winkle.
Oh, no, I mean Mrs. Rip Van Winkle.
I'm Mrs. Rip Van Winkle. There's my husband over there in the chair.
That's me.
Wake up, Rip. We got a crazy old man here.
Huh? Yeah, how can you be Rip Van Winkle?
Oh, sorry to be asleep. I'm all wore out working on my father's mousetrap.
Junior, don't you know me?
I'll get lost, old man.
Well, I was lost. I'm your pa, Junior. I come home again. Look at me.
I think you better go someplace and sleep it off, mister.
Yeah.
My old man got lost in the mountains 20 years ago, and he ain't been heard from since.
I tell you, Junior, I'm Rip Van Winkle. Don't nobody know me? Don't nobody know me?
Oh, Wolf's getting too old to take walks.
Why not? He's over 20, Judy.
Judy? Wolf?
Huh? Who's this?
Don't you know me, Judy?
Well, should I?
I'm your father, Judy.
My father got lost up in the Catskills in the year 1928.
What year is it now?
It's 1948, naturally.
Jeepers, I overslept. Look, I'm Rip Van Winkle. I've been asleep up in the mountains for 20 years. Don't nobody know me?
Oh, gee. That's the first time old Wolf barked in years.
He knows me. He knows me, don't you, Wolf? Remember how we used to sing, Wolf? How dry I am. How dry I am. How dry I am.
Gee, Wolf hasn't done that since Pa got lost.
No. He knows me and he knows the lyrics, Judy. You heard him.
Well, I guess I do too, Pa.
Judy, where's your mother?
Can you stand a shock, Pa?
What is it, Judy?
Mother's married again.
Well, I can stand that all right.
You see, you were declared legally dead, so Mother married Harold Van Camp.
The non-entity?
He's a radio agent now.
Oh, that's a step down, ain't it?
Oh, here they are now.
Did that picture smell?
Oh, pardon me, Judy. You've got company.
It's Pa, Ma.
Pa?
He's been asleep up in the Catskills for 20 years.
That sounds like your father, all right.
Don't worry, Mabel. I'm declared dead, and I'm happy to stay that way.
Oh, just think of poor Pa missing 20 years out of his life.
So much has happened, Rip. The market crashed, and there was a big depression.
Yeah?
And then there was worry about a war, and then there was a war, and... Oh, you poor fella, you missed everything.
Well, I'll try to bear up, Mrs. Van Camp.
You know, Rip, we'll make things up to you. Yeah. I'm going to put you on television for the Soothe Rest Mattress Company.
Oh, no.
Rip Van Winkle, world's greatest sleeper. You can make plenty, too.
No, no, Harold, I don't want to do that.
Oh, big money in it, Rip.
Oh, what do I need money for?
Look who's saying he don't need money.
Do you know what television pays?
I don't need it, Harold, I tell you.
What are those dirty old papers?
Parchment deeds, land deeds. I won them bowling. Look here, I own the whole United States west of the Hudson River. Well, that's my story of Rip Van Winkle, gentlemen. Mr. Menander, what have you got to say?
I'm speechless.
Here's a telegram for you, Mr. Allen.
Oh, a telegram? Thank you. Let's see. Say, what do you know? My owner, Mr. Deadair, is having a party after the Guild broadcast Sunday night.
And you're invited?
Yes, sir.
Well, that's swell, Fred.
Say, if Mr. Deadair gets to like me, maybe he'll let me out of the contract someday.
Well, I don't see why not. What's he say?
Look at this, Roger. Uh-huh. Having party after Rip Van Winkle broadcast, expect you.
Well, he sure wants you there.
Please wear white coat as you are to serve the drinks.
The curtain has fallen on the Theater Guild on the Air production of Rip Van Winkle, sponsored by the United States Steel Corporation, starring Fred Allen as Rip and featuring Kenny Delmar, Arthur Margetson, Mary Wicks, and Billy Lynn. Other members of the cast included Arnold Stang as Rip Jr., Harry Bannister as O.O. Deadair, Thelma Ritter as Mrs. Rip, Ruth Gilbert as Judy, Paul Crabtree as CBS, Hiram Sherman as Hugo, Ian Martin as Van Camp, Brad Barker as Wolf. And here is Roger Pryor with a word about next week's play.
Next week, ladies and gentlemen, the Theater Guild on the Air has the honor to present The Game of Love and Death, starring Katharine Hepburn, Claude Rains, and Paul Honreid. The Game of Love and Death by Romain Rolland is a gripping drama of love and violence and was originally produced on the New York stage by the Theater Guild. Week after next, Alfred Lunt really will appear on our program. The most famous acting couple in the theater today, Alfred Lunt and Lynn Fontanne, will be heard in their stage success, Oh, Mistress Mine, by Terence Rattigan. This will be the first radio presentation of this lighthearted comedy in which the Lunts appeared last season on Broadway and this season on tour. They'll be supported by the original Broadway cast.
Remember, next week, The Game of Love and Death, starring Katharine Hepburn, Paul Honreid, and Claude Rains. And remember, too, that the trademark of United States Steel, USS, on any steel product is your guide to quality steel. The Theater Guild on the Air is under the supervision of Lawrence Langner and Teresa Halbern, with our Minor Marshall executive producer. The program is directed by Homer Fickett. Carol Irwin is production executive and S. Mark Smith editor. Music was composed and conducted by Harold Levy. Your announcer is Norman Brokenshire. The United States Steel Corporation hopes that you'll be with us next Sunday at this same time.
This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.